then we'll have to give the speakers.
Yeah.
You're declining, sorry. Okay, you can make it. Yeah. If you can make it short, we must have some time for the speakers in case we get kicked out of here spot on.
Well, we had for the information of the three speakers, they should know, they should have some facts in their hands. And that is, we've had already in the city an ad hoc committee, which has organized a very successful demonstration. I might say that in that ad hoc committee, we're represented, I consider to be the best tenants in British staff, participated in the city, to help make a success. I hope they will continue. Now, the other evening we had a meeting in London to assess what to do on that demonstration. And there was a very little discussion. And basically, there was two arguments taking place. And I think this is very important. And I'd like to know if the arguments taking place is taking place with this. Other places in Europe. One argument was against our right wing, as those people who, through various guises, argue for peace in Vietnam, for negotiated settlements, and think that the movement itself should hang itself on such slogans and such positions. That's a very important debate, nevertheless, and one that will continue at the same meeting. And there's another important debate, which I think Carmen Mandel referred to, with these people who talk about the revolution. You see, they say we've got to have a revolution, and you people are wasting your time, really, because the revolution is more important. Now, as Carmen Mandel expressed it, that is a sophisticated argument in Vietnam, as I would express it. Sophisticated argument for sitting in meetings discussing. But it's not an argument for action, you see, which is what the Vietnamese want. However, there's another variant to the argument, and as some of the comments here have expressed it. And that is that really, the Ho Chi Minh leadership are a Stalinist leadership. They've murdered the Trotskyists. So therefore, we should be very careful, and we should do nothing. That's what they said. Well, it is because the comments who advance that argument, through some fantastic coincidence, do not participate in the ad hoc committee in any of its activities. Now, they may criticize it for its inadequacies, for its weaknesses, which I don't like to agree to, but the responsibility of a revolution or a socialist to try and make sure that it is good, that it is positive, and operates in the right way, participate in it. Yes, first to try to make sure it's a success. You can't let it take place and then say, well, it was a bad thing. And what really we are seeing here is a form of sectarianism, which has been endemic in the left here, of people who somehow think that the social revolution cannot develop the advanced colonial countries until they get around to making a revolution here in England. That's what it boils down to. Because all this talk about the limited nature of the Vietnamese Revolution is hogwash. Because the reality of the situation is, and this is how a revolution should look at it, if the imperialism wins in Vietnam, if they succeed in destroying the Vietnamese struggle, it would be impossible to make a revolution in England. Extremely difficult. That would work difficult. If English revolutionaries, British revolutionaries, are unable to defend the Vietnamese revolution when they need it, they'll be unable to lead or participate or recognize or see a revolution of any form in England.
Wait a minute, Peter, you can't.
Look, I'm chairman, you sit down. I'm going to give Ernest the floor, and if we have extra time, other people will be able to comment.
Just two short remarks on the same question to which Ernie Tate already answered. I think there is at the basis of the argumentation of the comrades who have explained to us that the main struggle is against automation, unemployment, and the incomes policy, an inaccuracy from a theoretical point of view and an inaccuracy from a political point of view. Theoretically, they confuse a struggle which is still and risks to remain for a certain period, essentially a economic struggle for the immediate defense of the material interests of the working class, with a revolutionary struggle to overthrow capitalism and take power. That is a very, very important difference. If we would have today immediately before us the choice between taking power in Britain or taking power in Vietnam. Of course, no socialist in his right mind would say we prefer to struggle for take power in Vietnam rather than take power in Britain. But that's not the concrete way the problem is posed. Today you have a revolutionary situation in Vietnam and you have a revolution which goes on, and you have here for the time being only the possibility of economic struggles. And to explain that it is more revolutionary to concentrate on immediate economic struggles of the working class than to help a revolution to take power seems to me really to put the things upside down from a revolutionary Marxist point of view. With the same thing, I think the comrade made a big mistake, theoretical mistake, political mistake, when he says that imperialism is more threatened by automation, or capitalism is more threatened by automation, the incomes policy, and so on, than by the war in Vietnam. That's not true at all. You mix things up. Automation is an offensive of imperialism. Incomes policy is an offensive of imperialism. And I can strengthen my first argument by saying that generally, unfortunately, this is not the fault of the working class. This is the fault of the treacherous leaderships. But as a result of the whole past, the working class movement today is on the defensive in the imperialist countries. Automation, incomes policy is an attack of the employers and the capitalist class against the working class. And the working class till now is not even capable, because we must have we must see the things like they are. The working class movement is so much on the defensive here that it is not even capable of defending itself efficiently. Wilson succeeded, comrades. You must know the truth, and you speak about illusions. You should not hide the illusions before your own. During the first six months of the wages freeze, for the first time in 25 years, the real wages of the working class in Britain were lowered. That's the truth. That's the economic truth. And there was not one big strike against that lowering of the wages. No, I don't say that because I'm happy about it. I'm furious about it. I say you must react against it. I hope that tomorrow, when the new wage freeze comes, there will be a big reaction. But don't say that in such a situation in which you have the elementary task of organizing a defensive struggle against an employer's offensive, which, if it is successful, the defensive struggle, could then very quickly, of course, create a situation in which the working class could go over again to the offensive. Don't say that that situation is more important as a threat to imperialism. That's what we are talking about, as a direct threat to imperialism, than the situation in Vietnam. I'll tell you what will happen if the revolution wins in Vietnam. If the revolution wins in Vietnam, it will spread within 1 year's time to 6 or 7 neighboring countries. That's the reason. That's the main reason why imperialism comes in.